Breaking the Panel is made possible by you and other listeners just as awesome as you are. If you want to support the show and get a little something in return, just go to patreon.com/breakingthepanel, because we do appreciate the help.
Heroes, like, outside of what they've done. Like if anything ever came out about Stan Lee,
right,
I would lose my mind. If, like, Ron Perlman was outed as some kind of madman, yep, I would lose it. Like, there are some people that I am really attached to, but again, I don't think it would invalidate their art for me.
So, like, if you find out that Stan Lee for the last 80 years just likes to go through malls and push little kids down, like, if that's his thing, like, on Saturdays he pushes them down the escalator just to watch them fall repeatedly. Casey, come on, where's your line?
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comics life. We're Breaking the Panel.
Welcome to Breaking the Panel, where we bring you all the stuff that we just want to talk about, all the cool things that we think are happening, and the things that need to change in the world, all related to comic books. I'm the Rock Out of Podcasting, Charles McFall. Over to my digital right is Chris the Wiz Wisdom.
Really?
Over to left.
I like musicals and all, but I'm not. I don't know, that one didn't do anything.
I don't know, when you were sleeping in my basement, I heard a whole lot of ee-hees coming out of you. I'm just saying, it worked.
Sorry about that.
Wait, was it last week or the week before where we made a joke about the Diana Ross version of The Wizard of Oz? Because I've been waiting for that, the Wiz joke. Because we got him with the electronics store last week. That
yeah,
was me.
Yeah, we did. You did.
How many other Wiz jokes are we going to run through before it goes into the ground?
Probably a lot. And even after it goes into the ground, we'll just keep doing it.
All right. I'm going to start making a list now. So,
all right.
Just so we're on top of it.
Well, the man who is failing to keep us all in line, Paul Klotz.
Hi.
Yeah, and he survived some night terrors that were not his own when he was in the basement for Dragon Con.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Okay, so you have that to look forward to, my friend, when you do the Dragon Con giant size team-up experience, man. It's going to be something different.
Night terrors?
We'll have to tell you that story off air because we just don't have time tonight. Everybody, Casey Strohs.
That's me. Correctly pronounced and everything, wearing my overall enthusiasm on this tepid Wednesday evening.
I think that was a missed opportunity to call him
Kasi Strohs. You're right, Paul. That was such a missed opportunity. One day we'll get it.
Well, they don't call him Charles Missed Opportunity McFall for nothing.
Casey, what have you been watching or playing this week that you love, man?
Oh, man, I will tell you something. I have just been getting caught up in another Captain America craze because this week, or today, was Captain America 695 hitting the shelves, part of the Marvel Legacy thing, but written by Mark Waid and drawn by Chris Somney. Hmm. And it is a fantastic return to form for a character that's no longer the biggest bad guy in the Marvel Universe. As you might remember with Secret Empire, Captain America was a Nazi and tried to take over all of Manhattan and started a bunch of Nazi school stuff like teaching Holocaust denialism in the name of Hydra, which was really stupid and I hated it. Form in Cap 695 has, you know, your classic Cap hitting the road on a motorcycle, traveling into the Midwest, righting wrongs and showing some real truth, justice in the American way. He goes to a small town nowhere, Nebraska, which has now become Captain America, Nebraska, after him saving them a decade ago from terrorists. And he happens to arrive in town the same time the terrorist revival is happening.
Wait. I know I've seen this before. Is he being played by Lorenzo Lamas? Is that what this is? Is this Lorenzo Lamas in the comics as Renegade?
Your reference is lost on me, grandfather.
Oh, come on, 1992-97, Renegade, the TV show.
Yeah.
No, this douchey, long-haired guy that I absolutely watched every episode of rode his motorcycle through the Midwest, righting wrongs, and do it. Everything you're describing, go look it up. I swear to God, that's like word for word.
If Charles was a little more read in, he probably would have gone the nomad route for you, Casey, but it's all right.
I was just going to say, somewhat like the Jack Monroe kind
nomad's
of
too easy.
Even Cap giving it up, but... Mm-hmm. Although he's not carrying a baby or anything,
yeah,
which is kind of cool. But no, it's got, this comic has got everything you could want. It's it's Cap'n, true to form, beating up a whole mob of guys. He gives an inspirational speech at the end of it, but the real heart and soul of the comic is, like, it's Captain America Day. Like, in Captain America, the town. Like, they have an annual celebration on top of being named after the guy. And there's a bunch, there's a lot of, like, not keynote speakers, but, like, citizens come up and they talk about, you know, how Captain America has inspired them in some way, and it's like three or four pages, and it's just, it's really, really sweet. Like, there's a great amount of action and some seriously, like, badass moments, but, you know, the sappy stuff kind of got me in this issue. It's something I've really needed for the 2 to 3 years that Captain America has been a scumbag. So it's perfect. You should check it out. It's only $4, I think. Pick it up off your local stand.
So did they did download
that Marvel pricing?
Yeah, it's a lot, but you know, it's quality comics. I don't normally tell people to run out and get a single issue when you could just as easily get the trade, but this is pretty fantastic.
So I know we talked about it on the show, and it's been long enough that spoilers are passed. How the hell did they resolve that whole Hydra BS with Cap? Did they just retcon it? What the hell?
They resolved it in the exact way they said they weren't going to, because it was quote unquote too lazy. And that was use the cosmic cube to undo all the damage.
Exactly. Yep. Paul, isn't that what you called? Isn't that what you said they were going to do basically?
Yep.
Yep.
Wow.
I'm not bitter about it at all. Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't predict that that entire arc would be a complete waste of time and that they would retcon the whole thing by wand waving at all, like not even a little. Like, I did not see that coming.
Yeah, my huge problem with it is that it's a storyline that maybe would have taken 3 to 6 issues back in the day. Captain America gets brainwashed and they find some way to undo it, and in a story about the cosmic cube, that kind of thing is fine, because it's like this object is in play for one story. And there you go. But when you do this whole dragged out thing where the buildup is a year long and the event itself is a year long, it's just a real slap in the face to what could have been a very cool Captain America heel turn kind of story.
Yep.
So, yeah. You know, Paul and I are in the same boat that it was just a waste of everyone's time and energy. But now it's all worth it because Cap's back, baby. And Mark Waid has rescued him from the crappy writing heap. Now 2, possibly 3 times. Because awesome. He wrote them after Heroes Were Born was said and done.
Awesome. Chris, what you got, man? What you been playing, watching, seeing?
Stranger Things.
Hell yeah!
Rewatched Age of Ultron because our good friend Frank Allen from Toy Power Podcast gave us a heads up that we should rewatch Age of Ultron before we go into Thor, which I'm seeing tomorrow night.
Yeah, I am too, so I don't have time to rewatch Ultron at this point.
And rewatching it, I don't understand why everybody hates that movie. And I shouldn't say everybody, but I don't understand why that's the least liked of.
I think it was just a little bit too much like the first one.
Did you just say that it's too much like the first one?
Just theoretically, big, huge, universal bad guy. I like it. I'm just trying to figure out why other people don't. I think
the problem is that it's the opposite. It's not enough like the first. Like, it's not a fun. Like,
okay,
the first
one has a
very serious threat, but everything is super fun the whole time. Where this one was, there's a serious threat, there's a lot of drama, and there's a bit of fun.
I see where you're going. I kind of went with it's too much alike because it's this overwhelming universal big bad guy. The team comes together in the end and they beat him. That's kind of something.
When the Avengers come together, it's got to be for a big deal.
Yeah,
I mean, they're not going to all get together and beat up Whirlwind or something. The fastest Avengers 4 I've ever seen. Jeez.
That and then I'm, you know, rewatching BVS, this time the director's cut. I've got an hour left in the movie.
Oof. I told you it didn't change the character, it just changes the story.
I guess the extended version really went for the whole our audience is stupid, so we're gonna give you a extra 30 minutes of us explaining to you the things that we think were too smart and that you didn't understand, and that's why the movie wasn't well received. As well received as we thought it should have been. Let's qualify that.
This is where in the comic books you get that nice little asterisk with the editor's note of Chris was touched by a very bad Superman and he will never like this movie. If you like the movie, it's okay to like it. If you hate it, Chris will love you forever. And
no, it's not that at all. It's just Superman is not good for, you know, the sake of being good. He's good for selfish reasons, and you know, he
I do want to add it to Charles Asterisk's comment. I would love to have watched BVS with an asterisk that's like, it shows Superman. it's like Superman was a dick in the previous movie. Like, oh, thank you, editor.
I don't know. I'm trying to go in with an open mind, but I will reiterate that one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen on film in my life is that ocean scene when they're diving for the kryptonite. That still holds up for me. Visually, that's a great image, but yeah, that's what I've been up to.
To respond to what you were just saying, because I haven't seen that version of the film yet, but all that explanation of the stuff, that was honestly like one of the big feedback things that they got, is that people were like, I didn't understand what was going on.
But to me, it doesn't explain that at all. Yeah. Like the only thing that out of those questions that were like, oh, it wasn't explained at all, was the bullet thing. And that wasn't 30 minutes of the friggin' movie.
Mm-hmm.
That you add in one like 30-second scene to take care of anything you couldn't explain for the bullet on your own, you didn't glean from it. But the rest of it is like, oh, well, we were too subtle with the Batman-Superman relationship, so let us put some more of this in. And then I was also reminded of all the courtroom stuff.
The African girl in the courtroom stuff, all that was cut out. I mean, why were they in the desert? How'd that happen? They added more there, and they added more of her story and how she was being manipulated. They dropped more lines in of how Luther was really manipulating everything from the get-go.
If you couldn't understand that by the end of the movie, how...
Of course you could.
How Lex Luthor... The original cut. If you couldn't understand how Lex Luthor had Machiavelli'd that whole thing to happen, that I don't understand what movie you were watching.
Girl, you've got brain problems.
Exactly. I mean, these are the same people that needed to have Martha spoon-fed to them.
The whole movie. We need Justice League to get Chris's wisdom groove back. We need Justice League to be right, to bring back... Now, I will give you... I don't know if this helps you. I will admit, this is not the traditional comic book Superman. This is a Superman I can get behind and like, but I understand why you hate him. But please, Warner Brothers, please give Chris the Superman he deserves.
I said it from the beginning. If this would have been an Elseworlds movie, I could have gotten behind it. But this is they're trying to sell this as the mainstream.
I really hope that Justice League brightens your day and makes you forget the other movies. I do.
But another thing that popped up that reminded me of how DCEU or Warner Brothers and this movie universe of whatever they're calling it can't shut up and get out of their own way is every time they go take a shot at Marvel about creative control and our movies aren't beholden to other movies, so it doesn't have to have this canon that exists through all of them. Because, you know, the events of Iron Man completely impacted Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, Guardians of the Galaxy couldn't have had the storyline it had without what happened in Iron Man and Iron Man 2. So that totally holds water, that argument. But I completely forgot about the photo of Diana and the group from Wonder Woman in BVS.
Oh, you did?
And I hadn't thought about it.
Okay, gotcha.
And that scene had to be put in Wonder Woman, like that scene of that picture getting taken had to be put in Wonder Woman, because why? Why would that have been done?
Is that because the movies and shared universe impact
each other? So perhaps you should not say things like where they're not beholden to each other. They don't have to have the shared canon when they obviously do. Is that not an argument that shouldn't be made? So that scene angered me. It didn't anger me the first time I saw it, but it angered me because of these stories that have been coming out in the last few weeks. Sorry, folks. I'm kind of on a...
I think all three of us in the audience are the guys in the car going, oh, crap, we shouldn't have hit that button on the radio. No, we're just going to look out the window.
It's called anger in post.
go back to Paulie. Casey. You need some excitement here.
I'm going to Paulie. Yeah. Paulie, man, what's got you happy this week?
She also watched BVS the director.
Well, I watched Stranger Things.
Yeah,
that was good. I will talk more about that on Chris and my show, Upside Down and Out, and I won't talk about it here. because screw you guys, go listen to that show.
Yeah, absolutely. And spoilers, it's still early.
But yeah, no, watch that. I've been kind of weaving in a little bit of the Goldbergs here and there because it's just, you know, I'm just doubling down on the 80s nostalgia.
Nice.
I'm trying to think, I had something else I was going to mention, but now I've kind of forgotten.
Did Superman take your memory from you too? Did he touch you in the brain?
With a big wet kiss on your honey lips.
I will take a cellophane S over that movie.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I have also been consuming Stranger Things. However, I've been moving slower than I'm assuming you guys have. I'm only 4 episodes in, but oh, my God. So good.
Mature.
So good, man.
Have we also considered the demo tapes as a working title for your show?
Oh.
That's not bad.
I've been watching Star Trek Discovery. I'm not sure I'm wholly caught up, but I'm close to 1 episode behind if I'm behind at all. That I think, Chris, you posted something that said, hey, after episode 3 or 4, it's getting a lot better, and I'm really enjoying it now. I think I saw that somewhere that you said or posted that. Whoever did say that, if it wasn't you, Chris, and I agree. It is really starting to sink in to more of a Star Trek feel and stuff going on, and I'm enjoying it.
It was more of a way to look at it. Like, that was my point, was if you just look at this as the origins of Section 31, then this is a good show. If you're looking at this like this is a Star Trek show, as the lay fan in the group that I am, I can't enjoy this as a pure Star Trek show. This has got to be a Section 31 show.
I didn't know you were French, but all right. I would disagree slightly, only because I'm a casual. I have no idea what Section 31 is exactly. But I watched it with feelings.
Wait, Charles, how much Trek have you watched before this show?
All of it, but that doesn't mean I remember crap, man. I've seen every episode of everything. Asking.
Well, because, I mean, Section 31 was a part of Into Darkness, too.
Yeah.
So I feel like you may have recalled that.
No. Is that the police military investigation thing of Star Trek?
Well, it's the covert ops arm
okay.
of...
I remember some of it, but it just... It doesn't... Really, whatever for whatever reason, the
Charles
military
isn't
aspect
big
of
on details.
No, not really at all.
He's a big picture kind
of
guy.
I'm on feelings of how does it make me feel, and I got to tell you, the first couple episodes we've talked about of Star Trek didn't feel so great. These last number that I've watched, however many I'm up to now, and again, I'm within a week or at most two. I'm pretty sure I'm within a week of watching it. It's starting to feel more like Star Trek, more like a Star Trek universe at war. And I had to understand that certain premises of this is a ship that's off the grid. This is a ship that's doing things that other ships can't and won't do. And they're making that more and more evident as they go through. And honestly,
but the morally corrupt captain, are you used to that in your Star Trek?
Yes. Not everybody was a Picard, dude. They came across other people all the time. In fact, I thought Next Generation didn't have enough swearing. They didn't have enough cursing. And they sure enough didn't have enough drinking on that show. I'm just saying.
Oh, see, I found the curse.
Are you kidding? Wait a minute. The place where they hang out is a bar run by Whoopi Goldberg.
Okay, go back and watch it. How often do they actually drink anything, and how often do they look drunk? If I'm on a ship for the rest of my life, I'm plastered like every damn day.
Hold up. Getting drunk is not becoming of a Starfleet officer.
And?
But that's, I mean...
So
it's a show about Starfleet. Okay,
betting half the universe is not becoming of a Starfleet officer, but that was the beginning of Star Trek, where Kirk nailed everything that moved.
Right, but...
He wasn't getting hammered while he was a captain.
No, he was doing the hammering.
On Star Trek, to be fair.
I'm just saying, I'm enjoying it. It's
Charles, I think you got to do a real run at Deep Space Nine when you get a chance.
Yes,
I watched like the first couple of seasons of that. For some reason, I got out of it, and that's the only one of all of them that I haven't seen every episode. I've seen every episode.
That's got everything that you want from like a Starfleet at war with character development. I mean, most of it just takes place on the same space station, but when they get to the Dominion War stuff, it starts to really expand more. They get a ship with the Defiant. It's a whole lot of cool, neat cool. little things.
I know, right? I did not see when the Dominion War. I know I have not seen that part yet.
Oh, that's when that show becomes the best of all Trek, in my opinion.
So I want to circle back for a second and talk about Trek Discovery.
Okay.
I thought those F-bombs were really out of place.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I agree. The way it was handled. But that's because Trek in itself doesn't do it. I'm not saying I want them to get drunk or swear more. I'm just saying I never thought there was enough.
I just felt like it was pandering, though. Like, because it was like...
Yeah, it was blatant.
Hey, kids, Star Trek is cool now.
Yeah. It was such like an edgy for edgy sake kind of moment that I was like...
We're going for that Deadpool audience.
Hey, the next thing they're going to do is pull up some classic music and it'll be dubstep.
I honestly, though, like, I feel like, well, actually, the funny thing is that this past week's episode has some, I think it was 80s hip-hop, if I recall correctly, maybe not.
Well, I know they did it in the movie, too. They played the 80s music there.
But no, like, I felt like the F-bomb could have been freaking, and it would have been fine. Like, it still would have been kind of risque for Trek, you know what I mean, out of a Starfleet officer, but not, you know... Not an F-bomb on a show. I don't know. It definitely sets the bar that, like, this is not the Trek show you watch with your kids. I mean, it was already kind of established by this point.
Well, that was established by the fact that you have to pay for it in the beginning. You know? I mean,
that doesn't really have anything. Like, you don't... Never mind. I'm just going to let you get away with that one. I will say that I just watched this week's episode yesterday, and I think the show's turned back to be more Trek than it initially seemed like it was going to be. The last couple episodes have been very Trek-style episodes.
And I'll throw it to you, Chris. You're talking about morally. You definitely have issues with your demigods on screen being changed, and I understand this. But while Picard
don't make it about a demigod. It's because Superman is this icon of, like, incorruptible, pure pureness.
I gave him Superman, but now he will say every captain ever, and Starfleet was...
I didn't say that. No, you said it was very Trek, as Trek is presented, how many morally corrupt captains are presented for you to say it's more Trek?
You get to see one most of the time, but then they do reference other captains and other things that are done. You know I'm not great on details, but I do know there's episodes where captains made different morally questionable
decisions. Didn't say morally questionable. I said morally corrupt.
I think he's morally corrupt. You put a freaking Navy uniform on him and put him on a battleship in World War II. You're not going to be questioning this. He's a captain at war. I like him. I would drink some scotch with him.
There are plenty of captains at war that are not morally bankrupt, dude.
He's not morally bankrupt.
Yes, he is. You haven't seen the latest episode.
Okay, I have not. I have not seen the latest episode.
Yeah. Strap in, buddy.
Well, one last thing.
Get ready for some real corruption.
after
your kids' eyes, folks, because this Starfleet captain's going off the rails.
I am loving Orville on that note, too. But the greatest thing I have seen all week, it brings me pleasure to no end, is Philip Keating dressed as freaking Super Mario carrying his Yoshi kid. That is the greatest freaking picture on Facebook ever. And that man deserves a Father of the Year award, because I would never do that in a million years because I hate my kids.
By the way, it was Halloween. For a little context.
Oh, yeah, for context, yeah. It doesn't matter.
That's why the kid was Yoshi.
It's still, yeah, because he dresses like... Phil dresses like that anyway, but...
Phil literally is Mario in the flesh.
Pretty much, yeah.
Wahoo!
Oh, my God.
And he's also awesome. 2017 Mario, because he's got the Odyssey cap on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
Gotta give the guy credit. I mean, he's up to date with his costuming.
And the man... Check him out on Botched. BotchedPodcast.com. It's really awesome stuff. He's a great guy. We love him. All right, so what is... Let's go with this headlines here. What are we talking about with... What we do in the Shadow sequel, Werewolves? What is this?
My favorite magic card of a director.
Yeah, to our walkie. Taika Waititi was doing an interview for Thor Ragnarok, we haven't seen it yet. Next week will be our panel for it.
Right.
But the early reviews out of Oceania is that it's great. But so he's doing interviews, and he was asked about, you know, the rumored What We Do in the Shadows sequel that focuses on the werewolves, and he confirmed that they're doing it. It's called Werewolves, which is a play on werewolves, which is great. And so, like, the interviewer asked him, like, you know, is this like one of those you were talking about, like, you know, you do a movie for Marvel and then you get to do a movie for yourself. Is this you're doing a movie for yourself? He's like, no, this is a movie for Jermaine, which is great.
Now explain what's the title with What You Do in Shadows? I've not actually heard of that. What is that?
It's What We Do in the Shadows.
Okay. So what
We Do in the Shadows was, it's a New Zealand film about four vampires who are flatmates with each other.
Oh, I have heard about this. Yeah, I think, yes, Paul, you might have.
We've talked about it before, but you don't remember anything because you're.
I work all the time like a it's man. Like
the, isn't it? It's like the Young Ones meets vampires.
Yeah, very much so. Which was great. It's a cult classic already, even though it's really not that old. Real slam dunk. And yeah, so it's exciting. They're going to focus on the werewolves, which of course had Rhys Darby as like the lead werewolf, and you know we're werewolves, not swearwolves. And it's going to be great. I can't wait to see that come to fruition.
Have you guys ever seen Leslie Vernon?
Nope.
Have you heard of it at all? Nothing.
No,
I haven't.
So Leslie Vernon is kind of a similar thing. It's a mockumentary kind of film about a bunch of people who like meet with a serial killer in his off time, like a Michael Myers kind of serial killer, and he goes, like, he shows them like all his tricks and stuff, like how if someone's running away from you, as soon as they look away, that's when you start sprinting, but when they turn back around, he's back to like a slow lumbering walk. but midway through the movie, it turns like into sort of like a more tropey traditional horror film, and because there's just a great twist in the center of it that's like cause for the whole like perspective and the cinematography to change. I really, really recommend it, especially if you like, you know, fun sort of like poking at the genre kind of thing with the supernatural and whatnot.
That sounds cool. That sounds cool.
Yeah,
that is
cool.
Dude, can you guys tell us where we might see this other movie, What We Do in the Shadows?
They're not even in, like, they're probably in pre-production at the best. He just basically
No, the first one, the What We Do in the Shadows. Where can we find that?
It's a movie film. It might be on one of the streaming services. It's almost certainly on Amazon.
Okay.
It might not be on Prime, but it might be a rental available. It's worth checking out, you know, pretty much no matter how you go about it. And honestly, if you liked Flight of the Conchords, for example, at all, or if you generally tend to like British humor, you know, New Zealand humor is not that different. It's you know, very tongue in cheek and quippy, and it's interesting because it, like, it fully commits to it being its world. You know what I mean? Like, it's good. It's fun.
Nice. Cool. So why are we talking about the Lion King live action movie?
Because they released the casting for the live action movie today, and it is straight fire.
Like good fire, or dumpster
yes!
fire.
Yes.
No. Like, okay. This has been a pretty dope lineup. We got the last casting today, right? It was because I think the Bloody's holes have been filled for a while.
That's inappropriate.
Can you feel the love tonight?
That's where we are. Anyways, so if you're not up to date on the Lion King live action casting, I'm gonna run through it real quick here for you, and then we can talk about it a little bit if you want, and we'll move on. Donald Glover is gonna be Simba.
All right, I'm down.
AKA Childish Gambino, which really makes his lyric from the ones I think it. It might be the other guys, where he's like, you know, why you lying? Why you Mufasa? Really funny now. Beyonce is Nala.
Wow.
James Earl Jones, of course, is Mufasa.
Returning for a second time.
Yeah. I can't say this actor's name, But Mordo from Strange is going to be Scar, which is going to be great. I just don't want to. I don't want to destroy his name. I'm sorry. It's it's tough. Elfrey Woodard is going to be Sarabi, which is also like this. This is all like top shelf. John Oliver is going to be Zazu, the freaking bird.
Yes.
Which is going to be, I wonder if it's going to be anything like Hey Hey and Moana was, because that would be ridiculous. John Kane is going to be Rafiki. John Kane's the only one I'm not super familiar with out of the top casting here. But then Seth Rogen is going to be Pumbaa.
I mean, he is an actual actor from Africa.
Right.
Like, he's born in South Africa, like... And he's like, what is he, like 75?
I've seen him in stuff, I just can't recall.
You're talking about Seth Rogen?
I know who he is.
I'm not touching this, but I'm pretty sure you're wrong about Seth Rogen.
Dude, he's T'Chaka. He's Black Panther's dad.
Oh, right.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, okay.
Okay. I didn't recognize him at first because he's got like a hat on in his Wikipedia profile picture.
You just actually have to use your words, Casey. Use your words.
Seth Rogen is Pumbaa. Billy Eichner is Timon. Billy Eichner being the one that does Billy on the Street, what's that one show?
He's the amazingly flamboyant coworker on Parks and Rec.
Yeah, he was on Parks and Rec for a while.
Is that Terrible People? Not Terrible.
Yes. I don't know if that's the right name, but yeah.
Are you talking about Horrible People?
Possibly.
Where it's the guy and the girl, and they're really horrible people.
Difficult people.
Yeah.
Difficult people. Yes, he's on Difficult People. We found every...
We did.
We did. People. Now, I'm going to say this. I trust that Disney knows what it's doing, but that pairing between those two characters has so much potential to be obnoxious. But we'll see. It should be good. Eric Andre is Azizi. Freaking love Eric Andre. That's going to be great. Florence Kasumba is going to be Shenzi. Keegan-Michael Key is going to be Kamari.
Wow.
And then J.D. McCrary is going to be young Simba. And Shahadi Wright Joseph is going to be young Nala.
We've got to get some casting for the hyenas, or we riot.
Those are the hyenas, isn't it? Zizi, Shenzi, and Kamari?
Wait, is it?
Yeah, I think those are the hyenas.
Jesus, Casey. Holy
I thought God. One of them was named Ed.
The dumb one was named Ed. You're right. I think Shenzi and Azizi, at least, I think are...
Can we get Ed Sheeran to be Ed?
No, the last time he was on film, people were not happy.
He was just himself on film. It was out of character, weird, but it worked. It was funny.
People don't want him to be in things, okay?
So Ed Sheeran as an African hyena is in character?
No, but it still worked. It'd be like, hey, that's Ed Sheeran. Sing me a song, dog.
All right, well, it looks like they renamed at least two of the hyenas. So I'm going to assume Eric Andre is the Ed of the group. Or at least I hope that he is. Because I'd like to see him crash into stuff as much as he does on his own show.
Yeah. So, exciting stuff. Beyonce was the big announcement today that rounded it out, so... That it sounds like a live action Lion King is going to be pretty dope. It also just means that Donald Glover is going to be the biggest star ever.
The man is stars on the rise.
Is the Lion King still the highest grossing like Disney animated film?
Could be.
I don't know.
I remember seeing Lion King in the movie theaters. It was wild. Yeah. My uncle cried, which is funny because he's kind of a.
I'm a man. That's so inside reference. I've never even shared that story. I just do it out of habit. Sorry.
About Paul's uncle? No, you.
No, it's about the I'm a man thing. I'll tell it someday.
So, not Chris, I believe you brought the next.
The next couple tie right into each other about Mickey Mouse whipping out his big old mouse tail and flopping it on the table for everyone to just deal with.
That's not a tail.
Oh, God.
So we've talked about this before, blockbuster movies and how it affects smaller theaters. And Disney has come over the top of themselves this year. And if you want to show Star Wars in your theater, you have got to commit to a minimum of 4 weeks in in the theater that you want to show it in. So if you are
the large, it has to be the largest theaters that you have. Is what it said in the article. It has to be the largest theaters.
Yes, it has to be the largest, and you can't pull it out of that. So
right.
So last year's deal, it was 60. Disney wanted 64% of the ticket sales. This year they want 65%, and if you don't uphold your end of the commitment, it becomes 70%. And there's other things, but so like when I always think of the movie theater in the town I grew up in. It's a single screen theater. They don't even make fresh popcorn every night because it affects their bottom line so much.
Yeah.
So they make fresh popcorn, I think, two, maybe three. I think actually because one night I think they're not even open. So I think it's two nights a week they make fresh popcorn unless they run out. But for him to have to commit to 4 weeks of just showing one movie in a town of, you know, like 3,500, 4,000 people, like that's a lot. And even for these the multi-screen folks, I mean, if you say you're an AMC that has what, maybe two, maybe three IMAX theaters or IMAX screens.
Okay, so like ours, we have one IMAX screen in our AMC.
Yeah, I mean, ouch.
Oh yeah, I can't tell you guys how hard it is to find a theater where I live.
Yeah.
For real, I'll feel bad, I'll tell you. Well,
but I mean, even in your area, I mean, they're all going to be feeling this pinch.
Yeah, well, the smaller ones, at least. I have a couple of small theaters, like, in my neighborhood, but, you know, I'm only at worst 20 minutes out from, like, 12 IMAX screens and a multiplex.
Right, but these 12 places that you have that have an IMAX screen, how many of them are going to want Star Wars, and they're going to have to put it in their IMAX theater, and they're going to have to show it for 4 weeks?
Yeah.
Right.
So well, the only IMAX choice you're going to have...
Is there anything else that's coming out in the 4 weeks when Star Wars is out?
That's what, the 15th? So second week of January is what you'd be bleeding into? I'd have to look. I don't know off the top of my head.
Nothing major. Nothing big. Usually those
are you don't want to be competing with Star Wars anyway, but...
Yeah. Ooh, I might miss Maze Runner The Death Cure.
Oh, come on. You need to see that in IMAX.
I mean, oh boy. Yeah, this I'm looking at what I see so far on Wikipedia. I'm not seeing a lot of crazy things.
Well, here's the thing.
The takeaway here is probably not so much the actual implication for each individual theater. It's the fact that they're kind of bullying them,
mm-hmm.
and that's not cool.
Not kind of. I mean, absolutely are.
And we've talked about that before. And Disney seems to be one of the worst offenders that we've talked about in the past.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about how they force all kind of weird regulations on you. Like your own staff cannot see this for free for like 2 weeks. You cannot rent a theater out to a corporate group at full price. It doesn't matter. You can't rent it out to a group for 2 weeks. It has to be box office, straight up, period, full price, no coupons, no passes. And you know what, Disney? I'm going to screw you a little bit. I'm using my movie pass card on this stuff. Screw you, man. I'm getting it for free, damn it.
Well, that doesn't affect them, though.
I know it doesn't, but I know. I'm going to go watch it. What am I going to say? But they're upping the percentage.
Your cheat codes of a movie pass is harming local theaters, Charles. Look at what you've become. You're the corporate stooge you've been.
Hey, I'm going to pay that
fight against.
And how can you go see a movie like Star Wars not in IMAX?
Because I never go to IMAX. My family hates it. I don't go to a movie by myself, so I don't get that choice.
I also wear glasses, and I hate wearing two sets of glasses.
No, I don't say that. I don't care. The thing is, it goes on beyond. I wanted to say in the bigger theaters, it had to be in the four. It had to be in a minimum of four theaters in the four biggest theaters in your complex. But when you're talking about like mine is a smaller suburb theater. And so they have 12 screening rooms. Some of them I went and saw The Mountain Between Us the other night, and it was a horrible theater. It fit maybe 30 people at most, and the screen was shifted to one side where you walked in because they were too lazy when they designed the architecture of the thing to make a screen center. So all the seats are shifted off to the right of the screen, and this place is going to have to do at least two, if not four, screenings of Star Wars constantly for 4 weeks. And honestly, I'm going to toss this back to Klotz because I know he was trying to say something when we stepped on him. Klotz, even in the bigger theaters, do you think after the second or third week is really going to hold up for For box office tickets?
I mean, I do.
Okay.
It's Star Wars.
Star Wars is the only thing that pulls continuous business like movies used to back when we were young. So, like, yeah. No, I mean, I've gone... Okay. Other than Star Wars, I think the only other things I can really think of that have pulled like this are Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings.
And Avatar that one time.
And Avatar.
much as we are all, I believe, loath to admit it.
No, I loved Avatar.
Yeah, I mean, so like, because I went to see Return of the King a couple weeks after it came out again, just because some friends wanted to go, and the theater was still full. Like, not full, like opening night full, but pretty full. You know what I mean? Okay. So it hasn't happened much for a long time, but Star Wars definitely pulls like that. Like, you would be... I occasionally go to the movies on Christmas because... usually, like, we do family stuff, and then we've just got downtime in the evening.
Yeah.
Like, you know, who wants to overstay their welcome with their family? Because basically, you want to save your sanity. So we'll go to the movies sometimes in the evening on a Christmas, and there'll be a ton of people in there to see Star Wars or something like it. Like, I saw Rogue One last year on Christmas, and there were a bunch of people in there. Like,
well, the interesting thing is, I used to do that too, but like around here, even with it being a suburb of Atlanta, most theaters actually shut down on Christmas. My wife and I, when we first got married, same reason, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, didn't want to outstay your welcome, wanted to keep our sanity, wanted to get away from the family. We'd already done it all day. The first year we were married, we went to see a movie. And we were like, hey, maybe we'll make this a tradition. By the second year, and this is 2001, most of the theaters in our area had closed on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Now, they're definitely closed for the day before Christmas Eve, and Christmas Day.
That's crazy. You know? That's a lot of money they're leaving
on
the
table. That's just throwing it in the garbage.
I think it's the market. I mean, I think it's just the market of, in the South maybe, is more...
Oh, it might
family
be
oriented. I don't know.
That's fair. I know here in the Northeast, though, like Thanksgiving weekend and Christmas weekend are huge weekends for movies because it's one of those things. People are home. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like college students are home and people are traveling to be with family. And it's that classic family thing of like, oh, we're going to come in for Christmas weekend or we're going to come in for Thanksgiving weekend. But like, let's get the hell out of the house for a little while. You know, because it gets a little crazy when right. You've got everybody all together all the time. And so, like, movies are a great opportunity for that. And, yeah, I mean, that's just leaving money on the table. Like, not to mention, you know, there's a lot, like, everything else is closed, right?
Yeah, so, pretty like, much.
You know, all the department stores and everything is closed. And for people who aren't Christian or don't celebrate Christmas, they have nothing else to do either, so, you know, except stay at home, you know what I mean? So, and a lot of times, you know, it's like that, it's the Christmas Story Chinese food situation, yeah. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
So I think it's crazy to not, if you're a movie theater owner, to not be open for the holidays, because it's, I mean, you're talking like packed theaters, like opening night packed a lot of times.
Yeah, I don't know. But getting back to the bullying side of this, this is not the worst or most egregious. And I got to tell you, my reason I'm upset about this personally is I'm all for capitalism. I'm all for if you have a product that's in demand, maybe you charge a little bit more. But the fact that they're just literally throwing down, we know that this is going to break all the records in the world. We want to up our percentage take. And if you don't do it our way, it goes even higher. It jumps up to 70%.
Do you guys think it's going to make more money than Force Awakens?
Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
Wow.
But the point is, I mean, I don't know how to phrase this right, because it's going to come off douchey. But how much damn money do you think you need? You know, not the guy using movie passes, not ruining theaters. You, the big company who's taking more out of their pocket, is ruining movie theaters.
I mean, that's fair, though. Obviously you can't really fault a company for trying to make their money, but like a movie like Star Wars is the kind of thing that gets a smaller theater through the year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they should do the amount of sales for that movie alone, you know, to really prop up at least several months of their operating costs. But here you're going to try to bleed them like that and you're going to force them to only show that's like really shitty, if I'm honest. You know what I mean?
That's how I feel about it. Chris, like, you've been quiet. What you got?
Oh, nothing.
Okay. Didn't want to leave you out. Back to Klotz. We're having an adult conversation. Let's move on into this, because this, I think, Klotz, we can let Chris introduce this if you want, or you can jump into it, because you and I are kind of carrying
this. It's Chris's topic, so yeah.
So, but this falls in that same thing of, Marvel will no longer be able to sell licenses to companies not owned by Disney, which means Netmarble won't get to do games and EA. Well, I don't know if EA ever did a Marvel game, but these companies that Disney doesn't...
The companies that Disney does not own the properties to, Charles, is that what we're going for here?
No, Disney
because
not
Marvel's owned by Disney, they can't be with anybody else? Is it? Are we talking Marvel having side chicks for all these years since like 1999? No?
Yeah. Well, yes, but I'm not even necessarily concerned about the video games. I'm more concerned
That's what
with
I thought
Netflix
about.
Shows. I mean, so now there's probably no hope of seeing Blade and Moon Knight come into this
because Netflix is not owned by Marvel. I don't, man.
I understand why they're doing it. They're trying to protect their IPs.
Yeah,
because
they
own
did
purposes,
so great with
Inhumans
protecting their IPs.
The diversification and having multiple partners helps you get to audiences you wouldn't necessarily always have inherent to. Just, I mean, they're creating their own echo chamber, and that's not how you get a wider audience. And I feel like that's a bad business move, but I understand their base thinking for it, I suppose, but
also,
I don't like
with the Disney exclusive streaming service coming up soon.
Yep.
It's completely understandable, but it's not, you know, great. Yeah,
I really don't think it's the right play. I mean, you talk about Marvel television, the best shows that have come out are on Netflix.
Oh yeah.
It's really not a competition. You know what I mean? And that's not to say that all the other shows are garbage. It's not. That's not the case.
Or that Runaways won't be good or New Warriors won't be good. Or.
But this proves that if you're these partnerships bear sweet fruit. You know what I mean? And so it's a bad idea to become entirely homogenous and pull everything in completely in-house, is my opinion. And ultimately, that was one of the mistakes they made on the video game side with Avengers Alliance. You know, they bought the company that was making the game, and after they bought that company, things floundered. And they eventually killed it. You know what I mean? Like, they destroyed themselves because they couldn't make it work. And, you know, we covered that on From the Helicarrier at the time. To touch back on that, I was reading Glassdoor reviews at Disney Interactive talking about like what people who worked for them were going through, and they're like, we've got all this middle management like nonsense going on. We've got all these people who are trying to build careers, not do their jobs. You know what I mean? And I feel like Disney is going to be a hotbed for that. You know what I mean? Like there's got to be so many people who are looking to fast track their careers at Disney. You know, it seems really dangerous to shut off all partnerships if that's what this really means.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing, is this article here is a little bit ambiguous.
Well, I tried to go straight to the Wall Street Journal one, but of course I don't have a subscription, so I couldn't read anything but the first paragraph.
Yeah, that's always a good way to get people to read your archaic publication.
Yeah.
So unfortunately I had to go to...
I'm going to say, even if Disney's not officially killing all partnerships, they're killing all partnerships. Because if I'm an up-and-coming company that would do anything with them, at this point I'm not going to, because you've just pulled all your partnerships. Basically, already you're showing that I can't trust you, is what I'm saying.
I mean,
and I feel like they did this in the 80s.
What were you guys really looking forward to? I mean, I'm not just talking pure potential, but specifically, what were you guys looking forward to with at least the Netflix shows that,
well, the unlimited, you know,
wouldn't
potential
have already been covered under what I guess they already have?
Go ahead.
As Chris mentioned, I mean, Moon Knight and Blade were distinct possibilities.
Okay.
We're looking for a home for those, and those are heavy shows that need like R rating, and that's what the Daredevil mini universe, if you want to call that, if that's what we're going to call the...
Are you saying you didn't care for the Sticky Fingers rendition of Blade?
No. I watched every episode.
Oh yeah.
It had its moments, but there's no Netflix.
That show was whack. Yeah, I tried liking it, and I was just like, this is rough.
I loved it at the time. Well, actually, I loved and hated it, but because it was the only Blade I had on TV, period.
Yeah.
You know?
And I would like to see where, so licenses that are already out, what does this do to their growth? Is this something similar to the Fox deals? So since Netflix already has a deal encompassing Jessica Jones, Daredevil, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist, And the Punisher, do they also then have the rights to characters that appear in those comics, or is there a large segment of that that's all of a sudden off the table? Same with the Runaways, same with Legion, same with all these other shows that aren't being made by Disney
Disney-made or Disney-owned companies, like, what does that do to their growth potential as a show? Did they just put a shelf life on them?
I would be worried if I were these companies, because contracts end, and they're kind of putting the writing on the wall. No, I want to say they're putting the writing on the wall, whereas they're not being clear about it and not maybe not coming out and saying all things when they end, they come back to us, period. If I were a partner, I'd be seriously concerned about this right now. And I mean the ones you just listed up, FX and
Netflix. This erodes confidence in relationships with Disney.
Yeah.
With Disney, yeah. But, you know, and there's that, there is something to be said, though, for the point that Casey was making earlier, because, I mean, we're coming into a new renaissance of Marvel, especially when you're talking on the big screen, in the small screen for that matter. But I mean, in the 90s, it was pure fire sale from that company. And that's why we run into so many, you know, bad products because of, you know, who they gave rights to, in, essentially in perpetuity, just by making a piece of crap once every 10 years.
I mean, they were just trying to keep their head above water selling these properties off.
Right. And Disney is stepping in as the responsible parent and saying, yeah, that's not happening anymore.
No, I get,
like, we got all the money you'll ever need.
You're not filing for bankruptcy. Yeah.
But
go ahead. Yep. Let them have toilet paper.
But you were talking about the echo chamber. You were talking about the echo chamber effect. And humans is the worst piece of trash Marvel's put out in the last 10 years.
Have not seen it.
It doesn't get any better, Casey.
Hey, Charles, it's not finished, obviously. And if your question is why is it a piece of crap, I don't even understand what you're asking.
Get off my lawn. Get off the lawn.
That's my point. I can't put my finger. I'll just stop my argument here because I can't put my finger. I'm telling you, I've been through something like this before. Feels like the world's coming down
a little bit. Does the Jeff Loeb thing with Inhumans, does a couple of the other things that have been going on with Marvel lately, does it not start to kind of point to them becoming very insular and not receptive to outside influence?
And didn't they do this in the 80s before Eichner took over? I mean, they were crashing a little bit in the late 70s and early 80s because of something like that, where they just got two corporate heads up their corporate asses.
Because, I mean, that's definitely a concern.
Like, Marvel or Disney?
Disney.
I'm talking about Marvel.
Because I was going to say, Marvel didn't really crash until like the
No, Disney's the one doing this. And I'm talking about Disney went through something. I was young, so I don't remember the details. But I remember they were, as far as their media went, they were sinking hard. And his name is Roy Eichner, I think. Last name.
Are you sure it's not Roy Disney?
No, I might be mixing Roy Disney with Eichner, but it's Eichner. It was in the mid-80s, and he revitalized their TV, and he saved their collective asses. And this just has that feeling of Disney's closing Marvel's doors going, no, keep it all in-house, keep it here. But Disney can do wrong, and we've forgotten that, I think, as a society. And they've forgotten it as a corporation, as you can do wrong. But the thing is, they're becoming the biggest freaking media mogul company in the world. What happens when they do wrong?
Couldn't be worse than BVS.
And that's our show.
That's probably a good place to take a break. I think, unless you got some more thoughts, Klotz. I don't want to cut you off.
No, that's fine.
All right, we're gonna go pay our corporate overlords, because, you know, Disney somehow acquired our show without our permission, so they're gonna stop us from running our yappers.
Mean we can make a Submariner prop?
Yeah, Disney, you don't own that, do you? Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a second with more Get to Know Casey. And we're back. And, you know, honestly, it would be very, very ironic if our ad was something for Disney or some Disney TV property that was coming up. I don't know.
Or an advertisement where it's the one person in the entire world whose favorite character is the Submariner. That mythical unicorn of a fan. Yeah. I don't think the Submariner is anybody's favorite character, by the way. For as much as you may have wanted him in your silly Facebook Avengers game that I was committed
to. It was yours, too.
Between 3 and 4 years.
Yeah, I should say. Somehow we did not cross paths during that time. I'm actually surprised, Casey, that we did not cross paths during that.
That's how I know you, man. What are you talking about?
You never emailed us. I didn't know you until you reached out for this show.
No, that's true. But, I mean, we were Facebook buddies because of it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, I was friends with a lot of people for that game. Oh, a lot of them don't even speak English. So
bet you didn't appear in his allies bar, Casey.
Yeah, maybe.
You weren't even top 49.
My allies bar was an elite group of people. I don't know.
Hey, before we go into the next segment, just because I don't feel like we're getting enough emotion out of Charles on this show.
Yeah.
Something just came across the desk, and I just want to read this quote out loud. And I want Charles to digest it. And I just, Paul, you might grease up the soapbox a little bit. Let's see what the man wants to do with this news. Quote, MoviePass reserves the right to change the rules of movie-going attendance and tickets availability to members in connection with the service at any time. MoviePass reserves the right to change from time to time the number of eligible movies a member can see per month. MoviePass reserves the right to offer members a new price option if they exceed watching a certain amount of movies per month. New terms of service. What say you, Charles?
No, I expected that. And the second they jack up my price, I'll quit being a member. I am playing the game like a true professional, my friend.
Bill of goods.
Yeah. No. I mean, we said this is non-sustainable. And they said we said when we covered this on the show. See, I remember covering this on the show. And I remember we talked about this. And I decided to do it anyway because the price point right now, let's get what I can out of it. If it goes up, if it's like Netflix, every time they've raised their price, which is insanely low for the amount of inflation and growth that has gone on in the economies of the world, people lose their minds. Oh my God, Netflix is going to $1. Trust me. I am not paying what I'm getting out of Netflix. I am getting a lot more than I'm paying out of Netflix, people. So I am happy with Netflix. If MoviePass stays the same, I'm fine. If they get past my threshold, I don't have a set number yet, but I'll know. If they get past my threshold of what I want to pay per month, I'll just quit. It's fine. I do agree with what I said and what Klotz, I believe, we pondered on the show, is the real gold here for MoviePass is all the data they're getting from me on the movies that I go to. That is marketing you just can't get in this world right now without
There's just
them.
Two guys in an office. This man has the strangest taste in movies. He's messing up all our statistics.
Wait a minute. He went to see My Little Pony movie and then The Mountain Between Us and then Thor. I don't get his patterns because I know how to work the system, bitches.
A good analyst is like, oh, that guy's got kids.
Yeah. And I've got two memberships, so I know how to work that system. I get what you're saying, Chris, but I totally expected it. I mean, I do.
So the big takeaway from this movie pass is the new Bitcoin.
and I guess, I mean, I would have expected it too, maybe a year into this new format that they're doing. I don't know that 60 days.
No, yeah, I mean.
Seems a bit.
I feel like this is going to open them up to potential class action lawsuit.
Probably. I don't. Honestly, as this company, they're not going to last. They're just not.
This is arguably bait and switch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like you were sold a service that offered, you know, under certain terms and conditions, and then in short order after this initial enrollment period, and they finally got the cards out to everybody, and they could use them, and then all of a sudden they're changing policy. Yeah. I feel like even the government's going to be willing to step in and be like, no.
I totally agree with that, Klotz. I really just think this is a temporary, this company's temporary period. The way they handled the rollout, the way they handled the instant media and everything, I mean, they botched every bit of it. And I don't mean in the good way like the podcast. I mean, they totally, if it weren't for our self-imposed rules of swearing, there'd be some choice words here, but they are idiots is what they are. They use Zendesk as their contact to the world, and I get a lot of companies do that, but usually you have somebody on the other side who follows up with emails. No, you literally get nothing from a person ever. Straight up robot emails. They don't respond to anything. I tag them on Facebook many times, just using what little social weight I have to throw around to try to get, I just want them to talk to me. Not once have I gotten an email, a comment, anything from any human being over there. I finally got my card in the mail, and that was it. They put a letter to the consumers on their website saying, hey, we're sorry that we had to open up a new factory to make more cards. And, oh, no, that factory screwed up your cards, and so some are going out before others. And that's if you, number one, in this world right now, if you cannot communicate, you will not survive. They cannot communicate. And then they do this kind of thing where they're probably looking at the bottom line going, holy crap, people are actually using the card a lot. And what are we going to do to stop that from happening? and they're going to lose. They might balance out and be a mediocre company. But I've already seen three, if not four, more companies pop up in the meantime since we covered this, that you could pay $15 and get three tickets a month to go see whatever movie you want. Opening night, 3D, IMAX, whatever you want. $20 a month, you can take a spot. You know, there are competitors instantly whose business plan seems a lot more stable than this one.
It seems to me that it's a distinct possibility that their leadership is trying to juice numbers to potentially line up an acquisition,
yeah,
which is still not sustainable. I would hope that the rest of the industry would be smart enough to realize how unsustainable this is. But yeah, no, I definitely don't. Like you said, this is really foolish. Like this business model is not sustainable, and clearly they were going to have to change things at some point. And if they get hit with a huge class action too,
yeah,
like that'll bury them too. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
let's all get in on it now. That way we can jump ship when the money's ready to, you know, get going. I want a little taste of that class action for the cost of one membership. Bam, I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, though, I've seen, the collective family has seen 7 movies in 2.5 weeks for 20 bucks. And now we're taking care of our theater and we're buying popcorn and we're giving them the money that they get to keep. But we're paying, you know, MoviePass is paying for the movies. And Thor tomorrow is going to be the first movie in November that I get to see. And I'm absolutely going to be going because I have the passes and I can. I mean, I'd be going anyway because it's us. But we've talked about this on the show. I'm the guy with the big family. So I go to the comic book films because that's what we do with our network. It's what we cover. It's our bread and butter. And then I might get to see something that's not heroic once a year. And that's probably a kid's movie to take the kids to.
Yes.
Chris!
I will Chris! Swing at it every time. Don't you throw that meat across the plate.
Chris, I promise you this, sir. While you are gone, I will bring it up every episode in your honor, and I'll shed a tear. I'm going to get a little Chris, tear tattooed on my face for you.
I'm going to roll up a freaking newspaper if you don't stop, okay? Stop it.
He can't help it. He's from the same state as Superman.
The state of denial.
I addressed that. I my thesis is that Zack Snyder just hates Kansans and Middle America. I think that's what that whole movie is about.
Who doesn't?
All right.
When do you leave? Because it ain't soon enough. I'm just.
I mean, 3 out of 4 of us are East Coast, people. Like you're the odd man out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Chris, you're the mid-worst.
We're gonna start calling you the flyover kid.
Your 66% looking pretty perilous there, Casey.
You're not kidding. Hey, let's make fun of Charles.
You whiz right over. So, Casey, let's see. I got a question for you. I wanted to ask you the last time. We're gonna play a little small segment of Get to Know Casey. I think we should.
Yeah, my favorite segment. I think completely non-self-indulgent.
I think we should do this for all the hosts as we move along. But since you're the new kid on the block, everybody, I mean, you seem to be a true, genuine geek, right? So you're going to love all of geekdom, which means you like DC and you like Marvel. But in those worlds, most human beings have a bend towards one or the other. So for you, if you had to choose one you liked more, which one is it? DC or Marvel?
I'm a complete Marvel zombie in every conceivable way. I've touched maybe a dozen DC comics since 2011, as opposed to hundreds, theoretically thousands of Marvels since then. It's almost a no contest, my man.
And what is it that about Marvel that really gets you going?
A lot of people draw the comparison that, you know, Marvel's heroes are more down to earth. They have like realistic guy problems, and DC heroes are gods walking among men. And that's something that always resonated with me. It may not be as true as it was in 1965, but I've related to a lot more Marvel heroes than I have the DC ones, just for some reason. I mean, when I listed my favorites 2 weeks ago, 4 of the 5 were Marvel and 1 of them wasn't DC. I think it goes to show. I don't think any of my favorite characters are floating around DC much anymore. Like what's Booster Gold up to, right? When's the last time we saw that guy? Give me a break.
It's definitely been a while. So, and you're very, very well read, at least comparatively to me. And Paul's better
to
than
this
I am,
big
sure.
dummy.
Yeah. Sure. But Chris was definitely our well read expert. And unfortunately, we'll lose that
I've been thoroughly impressed by Chris and Paul's knowledge of comic bookery, just in casual conversation, and their Star Wars knowledge. So, you've got good company, Charles. You just got to ride their coattails to real
success. Oh, I am indeed. I am indeed. Now, Chris, because I want to get to know you a little bit better, too. I know DC is your jam. Why DC?
Superman is the main Superman and Green Lantern. Just as a paragon of hope and goodness. Like, Captain America is that on the Marvel side, but he's a citizen of the world. You know what I mean? So to me, Captain has always been those American ideals and those where Superman,
he's the
yes,
real he fights truth, justice, American way.
Superman, I mean, is closely associated with truth, justice, and the American way, but it's never been about pushing that American agenda. Well, I shouldn't say never because we're not going to talk propaganda in comics. But for the most part, he's more a citizen of the world. While Captain America would not think before defending anybody's rights and civil liberties, no matter what country they hail from, I think he's too deeply rooted in America, and it makes less inviting to people from outside of the United States, perhaps.
Yeah, he probably doesn't have a huge following.
Which is why, I think back in 94 or 95, there was a study done, and I think that S shield was like the number three most identifiable symbol in the world behind the cross and the McDonald's logo.
Yep.
There's no doubt that Superman is easily the most recognizable superhero.
And for good reason. And plus, I mean, with him comes the birth of the modern age of superheroes. Green Lantern, I've just always loved the power of whatever you can think of, you can will it into being. And then later on, in the 90s, and I think, Casey, you know, you kind of called me out a little bit saying that even though I grew up with Kyle Rayner, how Jordan was my guy. And yes,
yeah, what's Kyle, up with that?
Kyle's good, and I love Kyle, and I think there will always be a place for Kyle Rayner. And I'm definitely, like, in the 90s was where I really cut my teeth on comics. But I think Hal Jordan is that guy that you've seen more growth from, just from the damage of seeing Coast City, which led into Parallax, which then you get to see his redemption arc through becoming the Spectre.
And then Rebirth. The true best age of Green Lantern comics ever.
Absolutely.
For a while.
And so much that has to do with just that one man, Jeff Johns, hashtag in Johns we trust. That just the idea that you can will these things into being, but it takes more than just being able to think it. You have to have the willpower to hold the construct. You have to have the strength of your convictions is essentially the to boil that power down.
Yeah.
And I mean, going back to Superman, Jeff Johns always explained it best for me. When you talk about how Marvel characters are more relatable, Jeff Johns said that Superman is so easy to write for and so relatable. If you just look at him at his base function, he's a small town kid, new to the big city, trying to do the best he can with what he's got. Who cannot relate to that?
That's the defense I always come to whenever people are like, oh, he's boring, he's overpowered. I'm like, you don't understand. Superman's about aspiring to be better.
Yes.
And it's fun. And Grant Morrison in All-Star Superman does it the way where it's not that it's easy for him to solve problems. It's the scope of the problems he can solve that make for an interesting story.
Yep.
I get it.
That's fair.
That is. Now,
the only bone of contention I have here is, are we going to make the argument that Superman is more recognizable than Batman?
Yes.
Yes. Absolutely,
yeah,
100%.
I would have to say.
I think that's hard. I feel like Batman has more penetration and saturation in kids.
Just ask Talia, am I right? Oh wait, no, he's a married man now. Just ask Catwoman.
But yeah, amongst the kid demo, I feel like Batman's probably a lot more well known. I mean, I could be wrong. I just feel like that's a tough thing. Absolutely, 40 years ago, I'm with you. But there's been so much focus on Batman for the last 30 years or so,
sure, yeah,
30,
I get you.
30 to 40 years, that I'd almost think that Batman might be the most ubiquitous DC character, or just comic book character in general.
Yeah, maybe now, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, no, Spider-Man. I don't think so. In the kid genre, Spider-Man is way more recognizable than either Superman or Batman for the kids. I mean, it's just freaking everywhere. I don't know. We could go on about that. Now, Klotz, I'm going to have a question for you next week. And, you know, if Casey, you got something for me.
No, wait. Stick Klotz with the same question. Come on, man.
I want to get to this last topic, and my energy level is winding down.
Oh, I didn't
quickly.
Know we had more.
We got our juicy one.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of things are going down right now, and American society, which affects world society, of Hollywood and sexual harassment and things coming out. And Kevin Spacey, you know what, Klotz, who was it that put the, was it Chris or you that put the article in?
Paul's got the most to say.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. Let's, Paul, you go ahead and talk about it.
So over the weekend, Anthony Rapp, who plays the science officer or the science researcher specialist on Star Trek Discovery,
and was also the lead role in Rent,
legendary in the Broadway community and everything. He came out over the weekend and spoke about how in the 80s, Kevin Spacey basically made a big pass at him at a party at Spacey's place when he was 14 years old. And that he felt, basically he talked about how he felt about it and everything. And, you know, that it was, apparently Spacey was intoxicated and just not good, all around not good. 14 being, you know, well below the age of consent. And also it made him uncomfortable, and he managed to sneak away without, to slip out of the situation without it going any further than just kind of, you know, being, it's weird. He said he picked him up like a groom carrying a bride over a threshold, and like it didn't go much further than him like laying on him for a little bit. Spacey was probably really, really drunk.
And I want to keep in mind that Spacey was 26 at the time. This was 30 years ago. And I'm not saying that it was right. I'm saying, you know, if you hear the story now, don't you're thinking he did it now. It's not that way.
Yeah. No, Spacey was, Spacey was much younger, but, you know, Rap was 14. And everybody knew he was 14. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, I would also argue, what the hell is a 14-year-old doing at a Broadway/Hollywood drunken party?
That's just kind of,
that's pretty close to victim blaming there, buddy.
I'm not victim blaming. I'm saying.
But when we say,
oh, it's icky, it was 14. This is a party where people, I'm not saying it was right. And I believe Spacey when he said that he blacked out, he doesn't remember any of it. He apologizes, you know, another stuff that he said we can talk about. I want to say in this.
This is going to get bad, dude.
I want to say in this area of why now? I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't have done it, but what help is it doing to come out and say this 30 years later when your career is going on? I'm not victim, but I'm saying things happen at parties. We got to put the human aspect in it instead of looking at the black and white and go, he's 26 and he shouldn't have done it. No, he shouldn't have done it. But at the same time, the kid shouldn't have been left alone in his apartment after a party. Somebody should have been looking after that kid.
Okay, I would posit, don't ask what was he doing in an adult's house at 14. Where were his guardians?
I mean, that's the question. Why was he there? But that, to me, that is, where are the guardians? Where are the protectors? A 14-year-old should not be at an alcohol and presumably drugs, because it is freaking Broadway and Hollywood and all that jazz. You assume sex, drugs, rock and roll, alcohol. Where are his guardians? Where's his protectors? Why is a sole 14-year-old left alone in a situation that anything can go wrong? And thankfully, it was a very bad come on versus something that could have been much worse. That's what I'm trying to say. Go ahead.
Well, all right. Let's start with what you're talking about. It's an industry party, okay? Child actors go to industry parties all the time. I'm not saying it's right, but they do. The general idea, I would assume, is that people aren't going to victimize their coworker who happens to be a child, right?
Right. It's like if it were a rap party, although not necessarily at somebody else's house.
Right.
Well, nowadays, I will say, because I've worked around some of these rap parties, nowadays, a minor cannot go to anything without a guardian. Well,
yeah, but this is the 1980s.
That's the other thing is, like, think of this. Just think of entertainment from the 1980s. Like, we talked about the Goonies, and like, there's all kinds of stuff. Kids roamed, you know, and especially a kid like Rap, who, you know, is working in the theater. He's in New York City. He probably gets around town on his own. You know what I mean? Like, sure. It's just, I just see it as him being a lot more autonomous than a 14-year-old today. You know what I mean?
I agree.
And he even illustrated in his story that he was young and he was kind of bored by the whole thing, because obviously, like, he implied that he wasn't drinking or anything. He didn't distinctly state that or anything, but he just made it sound like, obviously, that this was a pretty adult thing that he was just at, because he was an actor and he knew these people and he was invited or whatever, and he wasn't having a good time. He went into this bedroom and started watching TV, and the next thing he knew, everybody had left all of a sudden, and it's just him and Spacey, which is not an uncommon occurrence. I mean, that kind of stuff happens, you know, especially okay. with a young teen who isn't thinking of the, you know, the potential consequences
right,
of something
right.
like that. You know what I mean?
Right, because it's more likely that something like this has never happened to him before.
No,
right.
yeah.
Also, in the 80s, we didn't talk about this stuff as much. You know what I mean? Like,
right. And that
kids today and parents today are very aware of victimization and how all the opportunities for it. And we've had, you know, 30 years of media since then to cover, like, you know, of afternoon specials and TV shows and movies and everything that's, I mean, SVU alone has taught a lot of people that you got to be a lot more careful. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Obviously, like, ultimately wrong place, wrong time. So that's that. I mean, ultimately it really doesn't matter. Like, no adult should try to make a sexual advance on a 14-year-old.
I agree. I do want to correct one thing, because I looked it up because you stated it about age of consent. In New York State, don't know if this was true in 1980s, but as of 2013, a person who is under age of 16 but older than 13 can consent to sex. It is still gross. It is still icky. It is still unconscionable.
There's a caveat to that, too.
Gotta probably, I think Kansas is
no more than 4 years older.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's an age range for that.
Yeah, that.
But I just wanted to be clear. If we're gonna speak about laws, let's talk about the law. But no, I'm with you.
Well, I'm not trying to split hairs, but I'm just saying. I mean, there's no way that a 26-year-old there's no circumstance in
where a 26-year-old
20th century where a 26-year-old could have sex with a 14-year-old and it be okay.
I wish that were true, but there's definitely some states in the South where it's still, unfortunately, accessible.
I mean, look, this is some Woody Allen, you know.
No, you're right. Right.
Doing his stepdaughter levels of, you know.
That's
weird.
Not the point.
Like, come on.
But let's talk about, you can talk more about this if you want, but I like what you put here in the notes about, should we separate art from artists?
Yeah, we're getting mired down in the, I really don't want to split. I'm going to say this. I completely condemn Spacey for what he did. And I especially condemn him because of his response to it. He responded to it right away. And in his response, he said that he doesn't recall the event, but he still apologizes for what, basically, as he worded it, what was clearly like a drunken, you know, like his drunken behavior.
Yeah.
And that he knows rap and he respects rap and, you know, he's very apologetic for that. And then proceeded to, in the same statement, announced that he lives his life as a gay man.
Right.
So he doesn't accept responsibility per se, but he does apologize and then deflects by outing himself, which I mean.
Well, okay. To counterpoint, I would say he said he doesn't remember it because he blacked out. He doesn't remember any of that. But he took the extra step and said, but I am sorry for that behavior. He didn't question rap. He didn't say rap's making it up. He didn't say there's an investigation. He goes, I'm sorry for that behavior that I don't remember. I do apologize for that behavior. And then the question is, if he's not been outed, if he didn't out himself, well, he obviously came on to a young man. What else is he going to do? I think if he didn't come out as gay, then the story is not just that he assaulted somebody. Oh, my God, he's living a lie. And they rip him apart that way. I felt
this isn't really the best terminology to use when you're also talking about sexual harassment. But Spacey's homosexuality has been like kind of an open secret for a long time.
Mm-hmm. But
I mean, my mom was talking to my dad about it today, and she's like, he's like, oh, you know, he came out as gay too. And she's like, I knew that. I've known that for like 20 years.
That's like Liberace coming out. Not exactly, but the thing is, it doesn't matter.
Hold on a second, Charles, because there's more to this.
You're getting away from one big thing.
I don't think you're coming to the table with the full spectrum of what's going on with him. because the other issue is that there's also been industry rumors and stories, much like Weinstein, about Spacey for a long time. In particular, if you go around the internet and you go to some place like Reddit, where these conversations are happening about all this stuff right now, you'll find a lot of people from the theater industry who are chiming in saying that this has been a known thing for a long time, that they advise each other not to leave young actors with Spacey alone. Now, I can't substantiate that. But basically, people are coming out and saying this has been kind of a known thing. And two other people have come out to accuse him since the rap thing to corroborate that basically Spacey goes around and kind of forces himself on people and likes to project his power. The more recent one that came out today being a gentleman with the most hilarious name and awkward in the situation ever, Tony Montana, wow, who said that he grabbed his crotch and said, this is ownership or something like that. I'm paraphrasing. He came onto him, he grabbed his genitals, and then said, this is mine. So
no, I don't have any of that, no.
Yeah, that's why I was trying to stop you from, kind of coming to his defense.
Well, I'm not coming to his defense. What I'm saying is, I feel like we're on thin ice as a society with a lot of this stuff where, yes, we need to talk about these things. Yes, we need to get rid of the people who are doing these things. And I still want to talk about separate the art from the artist. But we live in a society of drive-by news bites. And that's literally, other than what you have shared with me, Paul, which is a little more deeper than what the radio is doing, that's literally what me and probably most of America is getting is, he was accused of this, here is his apology. No follow-up, no extra, these people confirmed it, no extra this or that. And honestly, it's kind of like the Bill Cosby thing. One person comes out, I don't know. Two people come out. Okay, there's a pattern already starting to form. 17 or however many people come out, there's a man, in my opinion, there's a man who had an issue who needs to have something dealt with. Make restitution, go to jail, whatever it comes. That's going to come down to the courts and the law. And that's going to be the same with Spacey. If this is a one-time incident, on the surface, what's being reported, I believe his statement for that one. I'm not saying that plays into every situation, and I don't know. I mean, no, I don't have the information that says he does this all the time. And if he does, then by all means, we need to bring that to light.
This speaks back to the issue we had with Weinstein, the issue we have with Cosby, the issue we have with somebody like Spacey. These are people who become pillars in their industry. They are rich and powerful and have a lot of influence. And so people can't speak out when something like this happens because it doesn't carry any weight. Because it becomes a he said, she said,
yeah,
of this rich and powerful person and this relative nobody. And that's the issue, is so that's how these people get away with this stuff for so long. And why it's starting to stick right now is because something finally stuck to somebody. Cosby has been an issue for the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Finally, mm-hmm, stuff stuck to him. And now Weinstein stuff stuck to him.
Yeah.
And people believe it. But these rumors have floated for years. You know what I mean? Like, the people who work in...
It's only now that the dominoes are falling.
Yeah. I mean, there was a thing not so long ago with Spacey where somebody... He got hurt where he said, something happened with his dog, he tripped or something. And, he made up two different stories for it. And what people who work in the industry said was, no, he came onto somebody and they socked him. You know what I mean? He tried to push himself on somebody and they responded and they just made up a bunch of, nonsense as to why he, looked all roughed up. This has been happening for years, you know what I mean? But nobody has the power to make anything happen. At best, this in that example, somebody actually stands up for themselves for a moment and it still gets swept under the rug. You know what I mean?
Right. And that and I wanted to be clear, when I asked a question about rap, why now? It's an honest question. And the more this information might come out, that answers the question of why now? Because he's in a place where he's protected with Star Trek Discovery and doing well on, yep, a big show. He's also in a place in societal history where Harvey Weinstein happened. And like you said, people are listening. Yep. People are believing. That could easily be the answer to why now. But that's always the question you ask. Because I don't see Rap going after money. I don't see Rap.
No.
He doesn't need it,
There was nothing about his statement that made it seem
right.
Like that's what it is.
But that does beg the question, why now? And we do need to answer. And I think you're leading, or I think we're getting to the answer.
Ultimately. Well, that is the answer, is that stuff is finally starting to stick. So the pump is primed, right?
Yeah.
People are starting to believe these stories, and there's the power of the group. You know, they can, the victims can come forward together and say, no, this has happened. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So rap outs Spacey is doing this stuff back in the 80s. And then we have another gentleman that just, you know, about 10 years ago, it happened to him. So now we've established a pattern over multiple decades. Yep. You know what I mean? Yep. It's very clearly something that Spacey does. Now, can we prove all of this? Well, no. I mean, it's hearsay. But if enough people come forward and say X person treated me poorly or tried to come on to me or, you know, do whatever, much like Weinstein, it carries some weight. You know what I mean? Because how many people could really just be making it up at that point? And but those individual people always felt powerless before because nobody took it seriously. Or if they might acknowledge it, but there's nothing you can do with it. You know what I mean?
And honestly, I mean, we're at the end of dynasties as a whole, as a culture. You know, we're at the end of we're seeing it in politics back and forth. We're at the end of dynasties there, and definitely in Hollywood with Harvey being possibly the most well-known treacherous dynasty, if you will, of rumors and things. And even we know about the joke that Seth MacFarlane even made 5-6 years ago about congratulations to the best actress nominees. You now are safe from Harvey Weinstein, I believe, is what he said, or something. You're now safe, or something. He didn't name Harvey, but
I mean, a lot of people are looking to McFarlane's jokes for guidance here too, because he also made it. He's made jokes or comments about Spacey before,
right?
And he's also made comments about Tom Cruise, which we don't have anything about yet.
They just found one about Brett Ratner.
Did they find one about Brett Ratner?
Yep.
I mean, and that's what McFarlane does. And see, he was using what we can look back and at least infer, if not, you know, directly pull from, is that he was using the power he had of satire and public, the public's attention to, I don't know, plant seeds to make things. Because you're right. I mean, until the time is right, and it's horrible to even think it and say that way, but until the time is right, one person coming out, you're just going to get crushed, and then nobody else follows you.
It's also kind of telling when you look at that Seth MacFarlane joke about Weinstein. He throws that out there, and you get a lot of knowing laughs out of the crowd.
Yeah,
but they weren't like, it wasn't full mirth. It was more of like
The question is, I mean, because honestly, I am a fan of Kevin Spacey's work, and I want to be very clear about the work and. I've enjoyed what he's done, and the question is, do we separate the art from the artist? And I don't know. I have no answer for that.
Sure. I think I would say absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, have any of you ever read Ender's Game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy is a total asshole.
Yeah.
Bleep that if you need to, but I mean...
No,
you're good.
Knowing that... Oh, God, what's his name?
Orson Scott Card.
Right. Sorry. It's been a long day.
Who's well read? I'm well read.
Orson Scott Card is a total like super right wing jerk. I mean, that book is phenomenal. You know, and adaptations thereof, you know, are at least on some level kind of interesting. But you know, it's also for me a thing where it's like, don't meet your heroes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because it's good to get attached to, you know, if you like a creator, whether it's a writer, an artist, an actor, director, you name it, it's great to get attached to the work that they do. And if you can attach quality to that name, like, you'll know that they will churn out future things that you like. But when something like this hits, yeah, it's always hard. But, you know, I don't think that it necessarily invalidates the things that they've done, you know. Mm-hmm. Another good example I have of that that's not an actor is Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
I think his case is also pretty complicated because he was just a very strange guy in general. And there was a lot of weird stuff when the allegations came up that one of the kid's parents was just in it like to take him for all he's worth and wasn't as concerned with his kid's welfare. But, you know, whether or not the allegations are true, I don't think, you know, I still think that Thriller is one of the greatest songs of all time, you know, like Bad and Pretty Young Thing. Like, nothing about his, you know, his personal life has changed how I perceive his music.
Yeah, right. And Michael is in that, not to defend anything he may or may not have done, but Michael is an outlier in those cases because of everything that went into making Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
What that final product, like,
That kid was strapped into a chair a long time ago and just sent on a ride that he probably didn't have a lot of control over.
Yeah.
So adult Michael is...
There was no adult Michael.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, then. I mean, I'm sorry for maybe using the wrong
name. No.
I think you're right. I just wanted that. He's kind of the outlier for me, anyway. Not to excuse any behavior because.
In fairness, you just highlighted something that's important. That you can't just assume that every accusation is accurate. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And that things are more complex than what they may appear to the public. You mentioned Woody Allen earlier. Woody Allen is one of those ones where there's a ick factor to him eventually marrying his stepdaughter there. Mm-hmm. But it's a complicated whole thing, his whole story. Like, I don't know what to believe because it's so complicated with all the stuff when you do the digging and like, you've got, you know, the one kid says that she was definitely like molested, and then you have her older brother being like, no, that never happened, that was Mia Farrow just like turning us against him, and he to this day I don't want to get into all the details, right. It's just one of those things where it's like, I don't know what to believe because it happened, you know, 30 years ago and all this stuff, you know what I mean? But the thing is, Woody Allen still made some of the greatest movies, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Michael Jackson is still a king of pop. You know what I mean? And Kevin Spacey is still a phenomenal actor that has made some great films. I mean, it just, for me though, it just like, it makes some of his performances a little too real. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think of like Usual Suspects with a duplicity.
Well, even House of Cards, with the shadiness.
Well,
power.
That's the obvious one. Is House of Cards for the last, you know, 5-6 years? He's been literally Frank Underwood. Is Frank Underwood literally just who Kevin Spacey is behind closed doors? I mean, it makes you wonder. Mm-hmm. I also think of American Beauty. You know, like that was, you know, that's the thing. Is it's like those roles now suddenly become a little too real for me.
He's not known for being a method actor. Is he?
Well, all actors bring part of themselves to the role, whether it's the nasty part or the good part. They bring something. I don't know.
I mean, don't you dare bring Daniel Day-Lewis into this.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say. No. I mean,
I thought I was going to make I was going to try just in our group. Instead, to be clear, it's just in our private group where I was going to try to be slightly humorous and make up a fake story of Tom Hanks as somebody's come out and said stuff about because it'd crush Paul. If Tom Hanks,
a lot of people.
We talked briefly about this before the show, like, you know, who it would come out that would absolutely like devastate an audience to find out that they were like a really skeevy person.
I think it would crush me too if Tom Hanks, if it came out that he was like just a massive hashtag Me Too perv, you know.
Mm-hmm. There are a few. Like for me, it's really just the people I already view as heroes, like outside of what they've done. Like, like if anything ever came out about Stan Lee. Mm-hmm. I would lose my mind. If like Ron Perlman was outed as some kind of madman, I would lose it. Like there are some people that I am really attached to, but again, I don't think it would invalidate their art for me.
Not to derail, but I almost want to play a what's your line? So like if you find out that Stan Lee for the last 80 years just likes to go through malls and push little kids down, like,
no, I'd be okay with that.
Like we're
I mean, I might have to hide the things I have autographed by him, but other than that, I'm still like, you know, this guy created some of the greatest characters that I've enjoyed reading my entire life.
On Saturdays, he pushes them down the escalator just to watch them fall repeatedly. Casey, come on! Where's your line?
Excelsior!
I think though the ultimate point we seem to be coming to, and Klaus, I hear you speaking up. I want to throw this out: is that we have to remember the human nature of things. Really good people can do nasty stuff, and really bad people can create beautiful art.
What I was going to say is that for me, somebody who stands out in this regard is Mel Gibson. Mel Gibson has been involved in some incredible films, both as an actor and as a director behind the camera. And yet he has, you know, publicly exploded in ways that are not commendable in any way. And obviously, I mean, and this is where the complications come in. You know, obviously he's been through some stuff. You know what I mean? That's very clear from those outbursts and everything. I mean, look at Baywatch.
David Hasselhoff.
Hasselhoff.
Yeah.
same with him. Like, those videos came out of him being a drunken mess. You know what I mean?
Eating that hamburger.
Mm-hmm. Eating that
Get it, Dave.
You know what? And these guys still contributed something meaningful. You know what I mean? Their art still, I mean, maybe not so much Baywatch, but like.
Knight Rider was pivotal in my childhood.
Right. Yeah. Oh, but,
you know, they're going to talk about his music.
I mean, Braveheart is one of the, I think, is still one of the greatest movies of all time. Yeah. It's a little cliched now, but that's because we've had, you know, 30 years with it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or like 25 or whatever, however many it's been. It's sometimes we do have to separate the art from the artist. But sometimes knowledge of the artist informs the art a bit. And I think that's something that comes into play with me with Kevin Spacey. I know that I do feel a lot better about absolutely loving somebody who's a genuinely good person, even if they're like known for playing villains. Snape. What's his name?
Alan Rickman.
Alan Rickman has played some bad dudes, but by all accounts that I've ever heard is that he's a really genuine, amazing person who was really good to people while he was here. And he looked like, for the Harry Potter kids, he looked out for them, from what I understand. You know what I mean? He gave, I can't remember.
Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, Daniel Radcliffe. He gave him a lot of advice and help. And like when Radcliffe was doing London theater, he showed up, you know what I mean? Kind of unexpected. Like, so like, just because you're good at something doesn't necessarily mean you're a great person, but it doesn't necessarily, just because you're good at being bad doesn't mean you're a bad person. It is interesting though how it kind of muddies the waters a bit. And this is going to be a tough time, I think. And, you know, like I expressed a couple, like either last week or the week before, that I'm real worried about something coming out about Tarantino, because he's kind of a squirrely dude. Like, I have tremendous respect for his art, but he's got a weird foot fetish, and he's not afraid to put it in his movies.
Yeah. No, and if that's something that he's already willing to put into his movies, well, God only knows.
And also, he's close to Weinstein, you know what I mean? I mean, Spacey, yeah. Okay, if you guys recall, when Singer came back to do Days of Future Past, there was a lot of controversy around that time because he was getting accused of similar stuff to Kevin Spacey. Well, it turns out that they're kind of buddies, and they've done a lot of parties together and hung out over the years. You know what I mean? So that's like another situation. I mean, and if you read threads online, like everybody's waiting for the ball to drop on him right now because there's been rumors about him for so long. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Does it mean that his films aren't any good? I mean, arguably, Chris would say that the early X films are pretty bad.
But Usual Suspects is the bomb.
And Usual Suspects will go down in history as being one of the greatest twists of all time. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it'll be, and great performances, too. And really crafting something amazing out of the rawest of clay at the time. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's a really complicated issue.
We're coming to an age where truth matters and everything will see the light of day. I mean, it's very difficult to lie or hide anymore in this day of information and internet, you know, and the fact that our society is looking to herald the true good guys and tear down the true bad guys. And sometimes that swaps where they want the bad guys to win and the good guys to lose. But the fact is, it's coming out. Things are changing. It's going to be ugly for a little while. It's going to hurt. But hopefully the new age that we come into will be with better people and we'll get better products out of it.
I definitely feel like the upside out of all of this, despite everybody who's been affected suffering, is that hopefully we'll have an industry going forward that does not allow this to happen.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because we will now have a culture where it will just not be tolerated, and you will be outed for your skeletons so easily. You know what I mean? Like, you can't.
I mean, they killed House of Cards within a day of it's being announced.
Now, I did notice, Casey, that Chris and I both gave a yep to Klotz saying that the industry won't let this happen, and you didn't. So apparently you just want Stanley to push kids down escalators. Just,
you know. Obviously, I support, you know, allegations coming forward and action immediately being taken. And it'd be nice to live in a world where, you know, Hollywood is completely turned on its head and doesn't allow for any of this nonsense anymore. But, you know, we're also talking about an industry that's been around for like 100 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And is, like many things, politics included, very much set in its ways.
Oh yeah, a lot of this stuff is institutionalized within the framework of Hollywood, and it's going to take a while to root it all out and change it. But you know, first steps, right?
Yeah. I'm glad it's happening, but to go for the broad stroke of, you know, in a world where actors don't get diddled by more famous actors, like, you know, it's a tough sell. Like, I hope for the best, but it's, you know, it is, I think, in a lot of ways still a pipe dream. It's a good start, though, 2017 with this. I will say that.
Yeah, it changed at some point. So if you'd like to have your two cents on the show, if you'd like to discuss the things that are going on, be a part of our conversation, you can email us at btp@giantsizeteamup.com. That's B as in breaking, T as in the, P as in panel, @giantsizeteamup.com. We'd love to hear from you. We're on Facebook at Breaking the Panel. We're on Twitter as @panelbreakers. And, you know, we're going to probably be working on Discord chat and some other stuff coming up in the near future. But let's we'll just leave it there. You can check out some more awesome shows on GiantSizeTeamUp.com. And tune in next week. We always try to bring the fun conversation and the real conversation, the things that need to be discussed. And we always want you to feel like you're a part of that conversation. So tune in next week to hear Christopher say...
Even Superman said, yes, it has made money, but it has not been a critical success. It hasn't given everyone that sensation which superheroes should give the viewer.
I low-key hate you right now.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.